I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm Nate Langson, and this text message was sent on Sunday, the 22nd of March, 2015. Joining me this week to discuss the top UK technology news will be Ian Morris. And that's coming up after a special feature with Andrew Hoyle of CNET.com. He's going to join us to talk about his discoveries at the Baselworld Watch Fair.
Yeah, millions of pounds were handed over that week. Millions and millions. It's a crazy place. Super luxury, and it's like Bond Street, but on drugs.
Yeah. Well, the reason we're talking about this, not normally that significant for a technology show, but Baselworld now, this year in particular, was the focal point for a lot of tech eyes because, of course, the smartwatch industry is really beginning to gain traction. And we wanted to see what sort of smartwatches were going to come out of this traditionally quite traditional watch fair, at least in terms of its analog and hands going around a clock and not necessarily notifications. So firstly, did you feel that smartwatches were a key part of this festival this year?
I wouldn't say a key part. They certainly grabbed a lot of headlines, but I'm looking at it from the point of view of the tech crowd. And so and a lot of the brands that I see there, I don't even know them. I don't know a lot about watches and luxury fashion in that sense. But certainly there was actually more than I thought there would be. I think the most interesting one was certainly from Tag Heuer, a very traditional, well-known Swiss watch company. And they'd announced a partnership with Google and Intel to do the first luxury Android Wear watch, which is certainly the most significant because instead of keeping Tag Heuer's traditional Swiss analog movements and its traditional hand-built look, this will, given that it's Android Wear, we can presume it's going to be fully digital with the same Android Wear software interface that we've seen on existing watches from LG and Sony and Samsung and stuff. So that's certainly one of the bigger pieces of news from the week.
And what about others in terms of was there anything else there that really stood out in terms of smartwatches? There's one I know that's got a battery that lasts for about 30 days, I remember you saying.
Yeah, that was actually a new brand at launch called Vector, and that watch is much more of a typical smartwatch, full digital face, which will change and show text and things. It's not running on Android Wear or anything like that. It's his own software. Monochrome display, but it does have the look of a classic watch. It's a round or a square version like Android Wear watches, and with nice straps and things, so it looks nice. But it will do notifications, incoming calls and texts and emails and Facebook things, and it will track your activities and track your sleep, basically everything you'd expect a smartwatch to do. But it, as you say, it will. They're promising a 30-day battery life, which is a significant step over the charge every day Apple Watch and most Android Wear watches.
I was going to say, even if they only achieved a day count half of that, that's still 14 more days of use than Apple is promising and some of their competition is able to deliver.
Absolutely, it's a big step, but they've done that with a few compromises. I would say this screen is only monochrome, and so it won't show the same level of, well, it just won't look as nice. I think you won't be able to show pictures or anything like that. It won't be able to show it doesn't show icons, familiar icons like the Facebook or the WhatsApp icons. It's all its own software, so that's definitely one of the compromises has to be made.
Before we wrap up, what was the maddest thing you saw there, apart from Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I hear was there?
Yeah, he was there.
And I know Will.i.am has a watch, I think.
Yeah, Will.i.am is partnered with Gucci for an upcoming smart band. So I will say that both Will.i.am's partnership and the Tag Heuer partnership, they were only discussing the partnership. So far, we haven't actually seen any products, which is why we're not talking right now about what they have done, but it's more about what they're going to do.
Right.
But actually, speaking of Tag, that would have been the most bizarre thing. Just the CEO, really good guy, really interesting guy, and he was he was loud and he was laughing and he was very exuberant. And right at the end of the press conference, he announces that to celebrate the history, we're going to eat his cheese. And it turns out that he has his own dairy farm of 86 cows, and brought out this 35-kilo wheel of cheese, and proceeds to slice it up with the Google guys on stage, which... yeah, definitely something I didn't think I'd see.
I've never seen that in any press conference I've ever been to.
It's fantastic.
Only at a watch convention would the CEO bring out a giant lump of cheese.
He was very happy about it. And to be honest, so was I, because it was delicious cheese.
Yeah, well, that's very good. Okay, so your stuff, if anybody wants to see it, is on cnet.com. Any particular article or photo gallery that you've produced that you think would be most relevant?
Well, for a good overview, there's a gallery entitled The Smartwatches That Mattered at Baselworld 2015, and that will just give you a good overview of everything that we've launched.
Well, now to talk about the week's top technology news in the UK, it's my friend Ian Morris. Hello, Ian. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you.
Episode 10 of Text Message, also running Windows 10, I hear.
Yes, probably the best, less said about that, the better. No, Windows 10 is actually very, very good.
Well, hold that thought. Just put that thought in a little box, put a ribbon around it, tie that ribbon neatly, put it aside, because we're going to come back to that in two stories' time when we talk about Internet Explorer dying and Windows 10 slithering out from its corporate loins of its parent, Microsoft. But first, let's talk about Argos. According to Katie Collins on Wired.co.uk, we've heard of her before, Argos is running a 3D printing trial that will let shoppers customize jewelry. They're offering a dedicated site that allows customers to design and order a range of 3D printed bling, as Katie puts it in her piece on Wired, including bangles, rings, earrings, and pendants. They're going to cost from about £55 to £120. They'll take 21 days to get to you, and you can change things like patterns and sizes of various elements of designs. Have you ever, Ian, and you are a married man, so you have bought jewellery in the past, I know. Mm-hmm. Have you ever wondered what life would be like if you could 3D print it from the shelves of Argos?
No.
Oh.
I mean, it's not that I don't like the idea of 3D printing things, but I don't know if jewellery necessarily needs to be 3D printed. I mean, it sort of already is, sort of. It depends how you define printing, I suppose, and probably forging isn't, but yeah.
I do like that. I do prefer the name forging. It actually has more of a connection to me because of my Elder Scrolls obsession. I forge various things in the Elder Scrolls Online game. But I think that I think what you're hitting on possibly is that this is a term, 3D printing, that's a little bit gimmicky, but it's actually just rapid creation, isn't it? I mean, lots of things in life are customized based on your preferences and then created. This is just web-based, and it's got the 3D printing hook as far as marketing goes.
Yeah, except it's not really going to be, I mean, I do understand what they're doing, I think, and I mean, you know, I suppose the idea is not bad. I assume what they do is they make a mold out of it, do they? And then
well, it's all made out of silver and gold plated metal, so I mean, we're talking proper products. Just
I mean, in order to sort of customize something, presumably you do a design. They then print it somehow in plastic and then make a mold from that, as they would do with any jewellery, and then pour hot metal into it or something.
That is the assumption, yes. And much easier to do that with jewellery than the rest of the products that Argos offers. I mean, if you're buying a cheap Xbox 360, you're still going to require the spotty Saturday boy to bring it from the stockroom. I mean, Argos is essentially like a lo-fi Amazon. And it's quite interesting that Argos has produced this 3D printing trial ahead of a company that you would sort of expect to already be doing a lot more 3D printing.
Fair to Argos, they were doing what Amazon does now a long time before Amazon was doing it.
True. Except instead of a website, it was a very large block of dead tree, which to me still baffles me that that is a product. But I spoke to somebody, actually just like tangent here, I spoke to somebody about the idea of the Argos catalog a few months ago, because I thought it was a relic of commercial history that they would still churn out every, you know, twice a year, I think they are, these giant books full of products. But actually, someone said, well, it's probably just so that you've permanently got something in your house. Like, everyone's got an Argos catalog in their house. Like, they have bins of them outside every Argos, and it's just kind of easy to pick one up. Whenever you need to consult it, it's there. And that's keeping it in the public's mind, even if they're not physically using the books to buy products from, which I thought was an interesting point.
I mean, I suspect most people don't you pick up a catalogue anymore. If you were to ask Argos, I'm sure they'd tell you that numbers of catalogues printed are massively down, when you know that you can go online and see what they've got. The good thing about Argos is, of course, that the stock is held locally, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
So you can put in an order and have it there. You know, you could put one in your local Argos, drive there and have your product in maybe half an hour. That there is a future in that model that what shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, I think maybe we could return to the Argos catalog. What's the phrase? Quandary conversation, just to see exactly how they're doing. However, we digress from the topic at heart. The other thing I wanted to mention that I thought was interesting is that the last time that we heard of a, I would say, major retailer dabbling in 3D printing was actually Asda. Now, Asda started this, I think, over a year ago, if not longer, and is still running it. And it runs a 3D printing figurine service. And this is the ability to stand in what is essentially like one of those naked scanners at airports. And you have a photograph, 360-degree photograph taken of yourself, and they 3D print out a 12-inch figurine, which you also get in 21 days. It starts at about 49 quid, if memory serves. And you can get all sorts of stuff, like you can have babies and adults and children and dogs and things, and they all cost varying amounts of money, because obviously most babies are smaller than adults. Not always, but usually. And certainly it would be a story if that was consistently the other way around. Interesting. Asda and Argos, just not two companies you would normally associate with pioneering 3D printing services. And yet here we are with two such companies doing such things. Amazing world we live in, Ian. What a great time to be alive.
Oh, I am bowled over with excitement.
Absolutely. Well, it's time to pick those bowls up, because Netflix and Spotify apparently are to make a £1 billion industry in the UK. This is according to Lauren Davidson, writing on The Telegraph. The video streaming subscription market, and this is broadly what we're talking about, is actually on track to reach £500 million this year amid consumers' growing desire for on-demand access to film and television that better suits their schedules and tastes, writes Lauren Davidson. Services like Netflix, iPlayer, Amazon Instant Video have created, quote, a dramatic growth for the video streaming sector, according to a new report from Mintel, with sales reaching £437 million in 2014, which is just over 50% increase on last year. So, and apparently, according to the same report, it could hit just over £1 billion by 2019, streaming. And Netflix and Spotify, obviously, at the forefront of this. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, this is something that apparently one in three Britons who stream video are happy to pay for such streaming. And it's now worth quite a massive amount of money. Are you surprised, Ian?
Not at all.
Oh.
I'm very happy to pay for Netflix, and I have been since it launched in the UK, and I've at no point during that period have I looked at it and thought, I don't like paying for that. I love paying for it. I don't use it a huge amount, to be completely honest with you, but what I do love about Netflix is that every now and then they come up with a TV series that's fantastic and I watch it, and I'm happy to pay for that. I'm happy to pay on an ongoing basis. I use very little of the Netflix catalogue of other things. I tend to rely very heavily on the originals, and I almost never use it for films because it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I like having Netflix. I just like having it. And I wouldn't want to be without it. And I think that the tide has been turning for some considerable time on this sort of thing. I mean, broadcast networks they serve a purpose to some extent. But at the same time, Most people don't use them as broadcast networks anymore. They use them as little sort of pots that they dip into.
Yeah, it's the live stuff that's the real money getter, because it's people who tune in, the second screen activity where people are commenting with each other on Twitter as they're watching, live voting. Like, it's massive money, and you only have to look at the number of these sorts of shows to see that these are the sorts of things. Like, you wouldn't watch that sort of stuff on demand necessarily like you would. It's a very different sort of thing. It feels to me more like live theatre, you know.
Except you wouldn't tweet during a theatre performance, would you?
Wouldn't one?
No, one would not. Not if one wanted to be allowed to stay.
Well, one has not gone to the theatre with me.
I think that's probably good.
I don't know, mate. I'm going to see Return to Forbidden Planet on Saturday evening.
Oh, well. Well, I don't tweet about it.
Fair enough, mate. Okay. Well, I think this is great. I mean, this is still early days for the industry, very early days. We're not seeing massive investments in return for this sort of money yet, in that Spotify, while it does make money and puts people off piracy, it's not generating such massive money that the industry's very grateful for it.
What I realized the other day when I was reading an article is that the industry makes quite a lot of money out of Spotify. The people who do not make a lot of money out of Spotify are the artists. Wonder why that could be. Is it because
there's not enough money being made?
Broken.
It's because there's not enough money being made yet. So it's sort of like, you know, they'll keep the internal money, but there's not being enough generated to pay for the people who are making it.
No, but I mean, I certainly understand why people like Taylor Swift would take their product off services like Spotify. But ultimately, the amount of money being paid to the record labels is higher by an order of magnitude than what is being paid out to artists. So I think, again, the music industry needs to have a good long look at itself. Let me ask you a question, Nate, a hypothetical one. If there was no such thing as a record label, and if artists were found, I mean, I suppose then Spotify would become a record label, but if there was nothing in between, so if Spotify went, oh, we like this person on YouTube, let's get them on Spotify, then do you think that the industry would be any worse for that?
That's a very interesting...
I think that might be one to break out for a full-time debate at some point.
Yes.
Maybe we could talk to some people and see what they say. You know plenty of musicians, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. I think that at the moment, it is broadly that choice doesn't exist and that the two would exist side by side. Would that be a good thing? Yes, I do.
Yeah,
and I think you see that tested already with YouTube and its studio program. You know,
Don't forget that YouTube is breaking more artists than anyone, and you know, lots of very successful people started. I mean, I don't like the guy, but Justin Bieber is a product of YouTube.
Yeah,
and I mean, that's obviously really bad as an example because no one likes Justin Bieber. But say if you were someone who wasn't born a complete knobber, then maybe you would be, you know, you would grow into a beautiful artist, and there've been lots of people that have been discovered that way, you know.
Yeah.
Singing
Lily Allen,
songs
of course,
on YouTube.
Prior to that was on the MySpace side of that before YouTube.
Absolutely.
Was big. It was MySpace. Yeah, no, you make a very good point. I think that it's something that if it isn't already happening and we just haven't really appreciated that that's what's happening, then it certainly will.
I mean, you only have to compare it to Netflix, don't you? Netflix started by showing other people's content and started then making its own. I suspect that the same will eventually be true of Spotify, and it will sign up artists all of its own. It doesn't even need to change the model. It could still sell the music in the same way. Look, that's something that Netflix doesn't obviously do.
I think the problem would be that only having that music on Spotify is not in the interest of an audience.
Suggesting that it would only be on Spotify.
Ah, so Spotify would be effectively the label, but
they would become the label, yeah. And of course, maybe it would be exclusively streamed on Spotify, but you could buy it elsewhere or something. I mean, I don't run Spotify, so I'm not in a position to decide how it works. But I think there's some potential there.
Interesting. Well, we'll come back to that. I agree. Maybe a debate around that is in
the future.
We could
round table it, couldn't we? Like you did with the brilliant Apple Watch coverage.
Thank you, mate. Well, we shall see. I'll have a look at my various musical jigs and see if we can't saw them together.
Amazing.
Internet Explorer is dead. At least according to a headline written by Sam Gibbs on The Guardian. And this is basically the web browser that will ship with Microsoft's Windows 10 OS might not be called Internet Explorer.
And it won't be Internet Explorer at all. It won't just not be called it. It actually won't be it.
Yes, absolutely. There's a new browser from Microsoft codenamed Spartan after the protagonist in the Halo series of games, apparently built from the ground up, according to Samuel Gibbs, jettisoning the underlying code from IE entirely. Now, this means that the browser won't be compatible with a lot of old web software that has to have specific code in it just so that it will work with IE.
Yeah, but that's not a problem, is
no.
it?
Let's IE, the name IE is more damaging these days than IE is. Like, IE is not a bad browser at all. It's just got this, I suppose it's kind of like, you probably wouldn't name your child Caligula, generally. I don't mean to compare an internet browser to ancient Roman sexual perversion and brutality, but with a name like Caligula, I don't think it's not possible to polish that turd.
Actually, didn't someone prove scientifically you can polish a turd? I think they did something to a turd and polished it, and everyone sort of stood around going, well, that's that expression gone then.
Really? Well, I suppose if you've got a turd and a bottle of Mr. Sheen, because he does shine umpteen things clean and they never point out what those umpteen are in the advert.
Well, what's an umpteen? Is it an infinite amount or is it a finite number?
Officially an umpteen. I don't know. This is one for a question for my friend Helen Zaltzman, who does the Illusionist podcast.
Yes.
And I've just done a little quick Google here. It means, according to the Free Dictionary,
yes,
the repository for world knowledge, it means many, very many.
Yes.
This was a wildly tangential...
You can't have a Nate and Ian podcast without at least one horrible tangent that's irrelevant.
Absolutely.
But yes, I think to return to the point about IE, there's really nothing wrong with it particularly. Certainly all browsers have their real horrors, don't they? Like, for example, I'm looking at the task manager in Windows now, Chrome, and Chrome is just eating my memory. Eating it. Now, I've got about 5 tabs open, and it's got well over a gig of memory all tied up doing its sweet little thing.
Yeah,
extremely irritating.
A gig is quite a lot, but we could go down the technical route down here. But so IE is going to go away. Windows 10 is going to launch without it, whatever the new thing. It'll probably be called something like Microsoft Visual Network Explorer.
No, I think what they're going to end up, they may call it something like, Spartan browser or something like that. There's no reason not to. It's a code name, but it sounds kind of cool, doesn't it?
Spartan.
It's a good name, but also
Spartan means kind of sparse and
yeah, that's right, and basic and kind of like no complications, and that's a good name for a web browser. So I say stick with it, guys.
I suppose actually now you put it like that. Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's very different. There's nothing like that, is there? The Firefox. Firefox doesn't mean a thing, does it?
No,
a fox that is of fire.
Well, and Chrome, a fox on fire sounds terrible.
Well, Chrome does mean a little bit more, doesn't it? But
yeah. All right. Well,
it's not massively relevant, but yes. Anyway, so it's a shame in some ways that IE's going. I shall miss that little E.
I won't. I think I wanted to return to the box that I just want to be blunt about it, to be honest. But then I use a Mac, and I haven't had IE on a Mac. I've got a Mac. Most of my machines are Macs, but my gaming PC is actually a PC, although I use Chrome on it. I wanted to go back to the box that I asked you to take away earlier and undo that ribbon and release Windows 10 out of it, because I think that hidden behind that ribbon is a very quick top-line summary of your experience of Windows 10 thus far.
Very good, actually. It has addressed most of my hatred of Windows 8, and I was never a particularly big hater of Windows 8, to be totally honest. I always I kind of saw where they were going with it. I didn't always totally love it, but using Windows 10 feels very natural, and I like the visual look, and I think they've tightened up all the things that they needed to tighten up. For example, one of the real embarrassments about Windows 7, Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 was the fact that it felt like two operating systems sort of conjoined in a really horrible way. And they have made an effort to tweak that a little bit. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not perfect yet, and I still don't think it works brilliantly on touchscreens. I don't think the furniture is big enough still. But I don't know, maybe it's able to scale for that. There certainly is a tablet mode now, which it didn't have before, which gives them the opportunity to switch it. I mean, this is what I said they should have done from the start, but hey. The look of it is grey. It adds in multiple desktops, which don't work at all. The multiple desktops are comical, especially if you're a multi-monitor user. They just don't work at all. My friend works at Microsoft and said it's a test, basically. I mean, this is not official. He said it's a test to see if people are paying attention or something, because it's really that bad. But they'll get there. They'll get there. Apple does it very, very well on the Mac, don't they? Multiple desktops. If you use a Mac, there's a pretty good chance you use multiple desktops because they're so seamless.
Well, I wanted to point out a few little facts that I dug up about Internet Explorer. Just returning to the browser side of the conversation. Internet Explorer 1 came out in 1995. Isn't that an interesting amount of time ago? That's 20 years.
That is a lot.
20
it's,
years.
That is mind-blowing,
isn't
it, really?
Internet Explorer, yeah. So we're celebrating its anniversary, but we're actually more happy about its death. It's very morbid. Version 2 came out in 1996 and also was released for the Mac. Interesting. And version 2 was also included in the Internet Starter Kit for Windows 95 earlier that year in 1996, which cost $20. $20 for a browser. It also came with 30 days of internet access with MSN, which I think was really interesting because these days that would be sort of like buying a Mac and also getting your Virgin broadband as part of your Mac, which would be a very interesting promotion. But that's quite literally, or at least as close to literally as you can get, what happened here. So you bought IE and you got internet access for a month with it too. In 2003, another interesting number, IE hit its market share peak. It had a market share in 2003, which in my head isn't that long ago, even though it's 12 years. IE accounted for 95% of all web browsers on the planet. And 90% of those were IE6.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is amazing. Set of a really fascinating facts.
Yeah.
Good old IE. I mean, it was there early and... It took over. I mean, presumably you went through largely the same process I went through. I mean, for a long time, IE was all I used because it was better than everything else. And Firefox is a browser I've had a bad relationship with over the years, so I don't think it's that good. And then Chrome came along and that was it.
Yep.
And I haven't looked back. But these things don't last.
I was largely the same as you, but I switched to a Mac in about 2006. So,
and do you use Safari?
I do. I still use Safari. Yeah.
But it's very power efficient, isn't it? That's the difference.
Safari is extremely power efficient. And the thing is, I've never used or liked or really even trusted add-ons. So
if I was
an add-on user, I really wanted a customized experience, I definitely would be using Chrome. And I do have Chrome. I actually use the Canary build, Chrome Canary. So it's sort of pre-release stuff. And it's good. And I use it for a few very specific things. Like I use it for accessing our CMS. Our website CMS and things like that at Bloomberg and at Wired. Although even that really is just so I've basically got a work browser and a personal browser. That's it. Safari is a great browser. I love it.
Well,
it's just simple
same,
and
basically.
Fast, and that's all I
they're
need.
They're both WebKit.
And they're both WebKit, yeah. They are both WebKit.
So really there's not, I mean, obviously there are differences, but you're basically using the same engine, aren't you? So
yeah. Ian, it has been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Nate.
I look forward to reminiscing more about Argos catalogues and the future of Spotify as a record label in future. This is why we do podcasting together. It's for tangents
it is that.
Like that.
Yes, true.
Yes. Well, don't forget, you can get in touch with us, podcast@natelangson.com. Thank you to Andrew Hoyle, who was at the beginning of the show talking about Baselworld. Please leave us a review in iTunes. We really appreciate all the people who've made the effort to do that so far. I know it seems like a little bit of a chore, a little bit of a hassle, but honestly, at this point, the show's doing very, very well, and I'm so excited about how many people are listening to the show and and commenting every week. But at the moment, you can really make a huge difference to how the show gets noticed by leaving a review. Even if you hate Apple, hate all this kind of stuff, if you do have a free iTunes account or something, maybe just break that barrier and just leave a review. It most podcasters get about 90% of their downloads through iTunes. So leaving reviews there, helping the show get noticed in that marketplace, really is so critical in the starting life of a podcast. And I appreciate it personally extremely much, extremely greatly. So please do that if you can. But if nothing else, just tweet, tell your friends, tell a colleague. You know, have you listened to the show and enjoyed it? Just tell someone where to go to get it and to enjoy it. Thank you very much, and we'll be back in a week with another text message.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.